One of our first lessons, we teach the progression to Pachelbel's Canon, and then we teach the progression to Let It Be, and we point out that the first four chords are identical, and we point out the difference in the years between those two compositions, which is, you know, a few centuries. And it's, you know, that's quite profound to point out as well, that harmony has not really changed a great deal. Sure, it's become more complex and chromatic in certain genres, but the essence of it is still very much the same.
You're watching Tim Topham TV, the Piano Teaching Podcast, and this is episode number 68. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Tim Topham TV, your piano teaching resource, where today we're going to be talking with a fantastic teacher from England called Tom Donald, who has created the London Contemporary School of Piano and is a man after my own heart in many, many ways. What we're talking about today is all about a contemporary way of teaching piano and what that should actually focus on. And Tom has actually built a school in London. He's actually an Aussie, now living in London, and he has built a school based on a much more chordal, improvisationary teaching approach, which is having a huge impact on his many students. Now, Tom was born in country Australia in the town of Coonabarabran. We'll have a little joke about that when the interview starts. It's near Tamworth, which is really the country music capital of Australia. He's now based in London and Europe. He's forged a career of intensely original work and post-jazz classical music. He's a gigging musician, so he performs sometimes pure improvisations. He composes soundtrack for film as well as for concert. And he's won awards and acclaim for his film work throughout Europe and even the Middle East. He's had concerts, Abbey Road Studios, BBC Television, BBC Radio, you name it. This guy's done it. And now he's created a school where he teaches the method that has seen him have so much success. So without any more chat, here is my interview today with Tom Donald. Tom Donald, welcome to the show today.
Hi, Tim. Great to be with you.
So I found out about you from listening to a business podcast, which was quite unusual. And that's why I was very interested to speak with you, because we don't hear many pianists on business podcasts. The podcast was called Eureka 14. It's a podcast called The Entrepreneurs, run by a magazine called Monocle, which is a fantastic group that do a whole lot of different stuff, and they've got a number of podcasts. How did you end up on a business podcast called The Entrepreneurs as a piano teacher?
Well, yes, it's interesting. Well, firstly, I'm a huge fan of Monocle, so I was very happy for them to ask me to go onto their show. And I guess we were getting recognition for our movement and the London Contemporary School of Piano as not just being a great providing great lessons, great service, but also, you know, being an innovative business structure. So it was great to get some business recognition, not just music recognition for a change. So that was nice.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us just a little bit about your music background without going into too much detail, but particularly as it relates to what you're doing now with your business and your studio and your teaching.
Well, as you could probably hear, I'm from Australia originally. I was born in the I grew up in Tamworth. So for the Australian listeners, you'll know that that's the country music capital of the Southern Hemisphere. Though these days I'm a jazz pianist and a classical pianist. I studied piano composition at the Newcastle Conservatorium. Pretty much immediately after my degree, I felt I wanted to be in Europe, so I went to London, and I have been in the United Kingdom for 12 years, though I like to see that as, though politically speaking, it's a bit different these days, as part of Europe, because I have done a lot of work in Europe and in the Middle East. London is a real, living in London is a real global hub, and that's been a great experience.
Now, you actually grew up in the very funnily named town of Coonabarabran, is that right?
Yes, yeah. I was born in Coonabarabran, that's not far when they filmed that film, The Dish, actually.
Yes,
yes.
So people outside Australia are going to go, you Australian weirdos with your stupid place names. Coonabarra brand. I mean, what a name.
I think I get at airports, so I do get funny looks with them asking how to pronounce my birthplace. But I'm sort of proud of it now because, you know, most people are born in cities, so it's a bit boring, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So you mentioned the word movement just before. You've started a movement or that's what you feel like you're doing. So you better tell us, what is the movement all about?
Well, I started the London Contemporary School of Piano about 5 years ago. So I made that leap from just being a private piano teacher to building a school. And what has turned into a movement is probably our teaching methods, mostly related to harmony and the harmony method, which is a form of teaching piano that uses studying harmony as its core basis, and this includes beginners. So we would typically have even beginner pianists playing relatively complex harmonies and chords before they can even read music, and even before necessarily their fingers are even ready to play such harmonies, to give them, well, let's look at the piano. It is an instrument of harmony. It's not it's not just purely a melodic instrument. And I think harmony is its greatest feature, certainly is historically with the music that's been composed for the instrument. But I think it's probably the most undertaught aspect of piano education. It's certainly, I remember when I was a kid, I was fascinated by chords and And I felt like no one was saying anything about it. I sort of felt starved. And what I've discovered teaching this to, well, not just children. We have a lot of adult clientele who learnt when they were children. I think they're feeling the same way. And I think that's sort of how the word has really spread.
It's really interesting to listen to you talk, because I was just presenting workshops up in Brisbane yesterday. And my whole theory is that chords are the most important thing, pretty much hands down, that we get chords and patterns particularly, that we can teach our students, because it gives them this vocabulary of music and a deeper understanding of it. So I'm 100% with you. I had a feeling that we would be on the same page. So that's why I wanted to kind of speak to you a little bit more about this, because, you know, this is part of the kind of movement that I'm trying to push towards as well. What do you think is so important about chords and harmony?
It's like the ultimate roadmap, not just of the piano, but of Western music. And not even just Western music, even a lot of non-Western music as well. And it guides people through musical context in such a more elegant way than, well, it will make them understand things better too. They'll be able to look at a score and organize all these bunch of black dots on the score into a deeper understanding. But I think most critically, it brings you closer to the world of the composer, because I often say to all of our members that the harmony method isn't really my idea. I mean, it goes back to Bach, when he used to put Roman numerals under his figured basses, and if that's the seed of his compositions, if it's good enough for Bach, well, really, shouldn't it be good enough for all of us?
Yeah, it's.
So I don't think it's that radical, though. You know, obviously, some people say it might be. I think it's. There's nothing that radical about it to me.
Yeah, I was talking to my friend Paul, who I was presenting these workshops with just yesterday, about the fact that, you know, back in Baroque times, everything was about improvisation. We had Roman numerals, which was effectively like a chord chart, and pianists were expected to improvise, vamp, create chords and harmony themselves, right? Yes. And then we entered into this era of 200 years of, no, we must look at what's on the page, and that is what music education is all about. And I love to think that now we're starting to see a shift back to, well, actually, you know, for one, if we don't have people that can compose and create stuff and we're not teaching them how to do that, then we're not going to have any more music eventually. and two, you know, that that's what Liszt, Bach, Chopin, you know, these people were creating music. They were improvising. They were phenomenal improvisers. Why on earth aren't we helping our students do the same thing? That's where I'm coming from. So it sounds like you're right on the same mark.
Well, absolutely. And I'd go one step further to even say that if us music teachers are not showing students the way, they're going to find the way themselves. And that's what's happened in the 20th century. I think, unfortunately, musicians have actually left behind the teaching establishment, particularly in popular music. They've gone out and created all of these wonderful things. When you just look at that whole popular music history of the last 50, 60 years, and it's like they've gone out on a wing and just taught themselves how to do it because no one else would show them. And I don't know, that's sort of like an insult to our profession. We've got to play some serious catch up there. And we might, and that's, it goes back to, I was reading a story the other day about John Lennon and Paul McCartney. They only knew two chords on the guitar and they thought they were writing great songs. And they were somewhere in Liverpool and they knew a guy on the other side of Liverpool who knew another chord, and they jumped on a bus and before the internet, and he showed them that other chord. And I mean, it's just staggering, isn't it?
It is. I think I'm right in thinking that at least one of the Beatles, maybe a number of them, couldn't write any music or read music. They were purely ear players, I think. Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Do you reckon this is also related to the explosion of YouTube tutorials and the fact that kids are trying to teach themselves more and more by that method?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's playing a really positive role in just we are in the era of information, probably information overload. But I think that is bringing everything up to date very swiftly. However, I think the risk that goes with that, and whilst I still think there's more pros than there are cons, is that there is so much information. How is any kid going to be able to sift through all of that and find the diamond in the rough? So, yeah.
And so looking at it from your perspective, what you just said before, we could almost see as YouTube tutorials, a lot of teachers bemoan the fact that all their students are now, you know, watching YouTube tutorials, and isn't that terrible? Maybe we should just be turning that back on ourselves and going, well, maybe it's because we're not filling a need for those students.
That's right. Well, we shouldn't be bemoaning it. We should be contributing to it. We should be adding our own content. I mean, we're not very YouTube heavy, where that's deliberate, but I think it's absolutely wonderful when a student comes in and says, well, I taught myself this on YouTube. And actually I often find they're teaching it to themselves the hard way when they do it on YouTube, and I'm like, that's fantastic. By the way, there's actually a really much easier way you could have gone through that. And then next time they know that. So I think it's a wonderful collaboration with that wider world of information. And, yeah, I think it's very exciting.
So let's unpack that a little bit more, because there'll be teachers listening who are thinking, well, what should I be doing? How can I help that student do it more easily? What is the easier way, Tom?
Well, that's a very, very good question. And it does go down to the repertoire. So, I mean, if you look at a contemporary classical soundtrack piece, something like that are very popular with kids and with adult students as well, to go onto YouTube and find, you'll find it's often very similar chord progressions. So so many chord progression, or so many contemporary pieces use chord progressions, like I'm sort of near the piano right now, but things like that, you know, that's chord 6, 4, 1, and 5, and I'm sure most of your members know exactly what I'm talking about. So what, instead of teaching the student that piece of music, they say, well, I really want to learn this song by Adele or Elton John or whoever it is, or from this film, why don't we teach instead the formula first? We say, okay, that's great, you want to play that. By the way, let me show you this formula that is used in literally thousands of songs, and then go off and find that formula in all of this music. And that, to a student, is profound, and to a musician it is as well, because they're finding out the sounds that they are drawn to, and they're being able to put a label on it. And so there's a lot of implications there.
It's the old teaching the kids to fish rather than giving them a fish, isn't it? It's unlocking a key to a whole world of things rather than them just struggling away on one YouTube tutorial or just learning one piece of music in isolation. It's not in isolation. All of these things, even all the, you know, half of the method book music, the classical repertoire as well. You take it back. It's often a simple chord progression.
That's right. I mean, in our one of our first lessons, we teach the progression to Pachelbel's Canon, and then we teach the progression to Let It Be, and we point out that the first four chords are identical, and we point out the difference in the years between those two compositions, which is, you know, a few centuries, and that's quite profound to point out as well, that harmony has not really changed a great deal. Sure, it's become more complex and chromatic in certain genres, but the essence of it is still very much the same.
Absolutely. When it comes to pop music, I'm always getting asked, I gather you teach a fair bit of pop and you encourage your students to do that. What's your take on singing for pop music to get over the hurdles of rhythm?
So singing as you play.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, one very specific clientele we get are vocalists who want to learn to accompany themselves. So we run a lot of courses for singers who want to learn to play as they sing, and we encourage them to do it immediately rather than taking a linear like approach. Well, let's wait till I master the piano and then I'll accompany myself. And of course that will never happen. So we encourage the moment you're playing the chords, sing along. Now, for singers, that's fine. They're quite happy to try that and plunge themselves right into it. But for some students, they'll get a bit shy with that, and so I end up getting a bit of singing practice in myself, which is is not always the best thing for the students sometimes. Fortunately, we have a second piano in our studio, so I can just jam along with them if my voice is distracting them.
Yeah, it is always one of the questions that I get in workshops and online is about how to teach the rhythm of pop songs. If kids are trying to actually play the rhythm, it's incredibly difficult because they're so complex. Often the arrangements that are written aren't necessarily all that precise because it's about groove and feel. I've moved more and more to, while some students will want to play the rhythm and they just won't sing, more and more of my kids, as I encourage them, are starting to sing and realizing that that is just a hell of a lot easier way to play pop music, learn the chord progression, keep a steady beat, and sing those challenging rhythms.
Yes. Well, the thing too, the reason why it often doesn't work to play the melody on the piano for those pop songs is those melodies were not designed to be played on a piano. So if you get a song like Elton John, Your Song, and you just, you know, you play the melody, it sounds really dull as a piano melody because it's a vocal melody and it's the harmony that's meant to be played on the piano. So that's one thing I have to often explain to a lot of our students. You don't want to be playing this melody on the piano. It's meant for a singer. And if you want to arrange it as a solo piano piece, you're going to have to really rework it and even make changes to the tune to make it work on a piano. So that enters another challenge then.
I realized after starting to put this podcast together that it's your business, your school is called the London Contemporary School of Piano. At first, I thought it was the London School of Contemporary Piano, which is actually quite a different thing. So, do you advocate teaching, obviously, in your contemporary school? Teaching classical repertoire, romantic, all of the basics, all that kind of stuff, or is it very much focused on contemporary and popular music?
We teach a lot of classical music. We just teach it very differently. Most of our members will play classical music on top of popular and jazz. In our beginner syllabus, actually, after we show them pretty much most of the major and minor chords on every tone and semitone, we will then teach them how to invert, play some very popular chord progressions with it, and then immediately one of the first classical pieces they learn with dots is Bach's C major prelude, because it's a piece of it's a very graceful piece of broken chords. And what's very magical about that is very quickly students see the relationship of what they've been playing with the Bach, and they're blown away by how contemporary the harmony sounds. The major seventh that's somewhere, I forget which bar it's in, but the seventh is in the bass. And I think then when people realize, well, that piece was written in 1722, again, goes back to what I was saying, how much has harmony really changed? And so we use a lot of classical music in our syllabus. We've had some students who've achieved extraordinary things with their classical piano playing as well, if that's the path they wish to focus on more. But we break it apart in a very different way.
So it's more about the contemporary approach to the teaching. That's what you're doing.
Yes. Yes. And the melting pot. So
what do you mean by
student
that?
Well, yes, the diversity, I would say. So if we had a student who came along, for instance, who was a jazz pianist, we would probably insist they play lots of Bach because that's not going to hurt their left hand at all, and their and their finger control and a whole wide range of things. If we have a student who wants to play a lot of popular music, we would probably educate them with a lot of jazz to inform their understanding of groove. So we really sort of make sure that we're giving everyone the chance to cross the boundaries and to experience a music that they were not necessarily familiar with.
Great. Well, look, let's discuss your school a little bit more before we come back into the pedagogy side of things. You've moved across the world to a place that is, by definition, a pretty traditional city, yeah, where you've got the Royal College of Music and the ABRSM and all these very traditional, older institutions. And you've gone, I'm going to start a more contemporary school. Tell us a little bit about the school, how many teachers, what size it is, whereabouts is it?
So we're based on Baker Street, so we're very close to the Royal Academy, right, just about a 5-10 minute walk. Very close to the ABRSM headquarters. I think London is, as I was saying earlier, is a real international hub. And so whilst there is that very traditional world in London, there also is, it's still the city of Bowie, and it's the city of the punk movement in the 80s. London is Pink Floyd. I mean, London is a very diverse place. It's probably the most diverse city in the world. Certainly I haven't seen a city that outstrips its diversity. And you know, we actually have some students who work for the ABRSM who come and visit us. I think that this time in our history, in the 21st century, I think both the traditional world is realizing it has to play catch up. A lot of institutions, very more formalized institutions, are changing their structures because they realize they need to prepare students, professional musicians, to be more equipped for the real world, not just the idealistic classical world. Now, as for the size of our organisation, we try not to be huge and massive and be bereft by admin. So at the moment we have 5 staff. Next year we're expanding to 8, and we're going to lock it at that. We're expanding to only 150 students. After that, there's no more places left. But we are expanding in a different way. We're starting up a new magazine. We have people who come from about 10 countries every year for our retreat courses and our crash courses. So we have a lot of clients that are not regular clients. They just come for a week. We have a lot of music teachers that just come for a week, or just people who want to experience something new. So we're looking sort of in a more outward way, not just to grow and become bigger and dumber like some companies do. that's the sort of aim we're looking for it next year. And it's all very exciting. We have some fantastic musicians that are training students, and it's a very exciting time.
I would imagine that you would get quite a few older students coming to you and going, oh, wow, if only I was taught this stuff when I was younger, I would have kept playing. You mentioned you had adult students who come back to piano.
Yes.
Is that quite a common thread?
We hear that all the time.
Yeah.
And actually, I often I often say that to myself, so it would have been nice. I was very lucky. I had a very good teacher actually when I was a child. But yes, I think a lot of people say that.
You've obviously got a very particular style of teaching that you do. You've called it the harmony method. I assume that's one aspect of it. How do you go
Yes.
about making sure you're finding teachers? This is one of the hardest things to do, I would imagine, finding teachers that have the same philosophy and can follow the same process as what you're teaching.
Well, firstly, in London, I am completely, and we are completely spoiled for choice. There are so many phenomenal concert pianists and musicians in from all different musical backgrounds. So, firstly, it's going through all of the CVs and the applications,
But you don't necessarily want a concert pianist, do you? In fact, you almost don't want a concert pianist, I would have thought.
well, you'd be surprised. I mean, a lot of concert pianists are even reaching out for a new approach. So, providing, and though, I mean, our staff are all amazing. We have one amazing concert pianist. We actually have two amazing concert pianists on our team. One of them, she specializes in contemporary classical music. So, she played Steve Reich at the BBC Proms this year. And one of our other concert pianists, he's also a great violinist. So, he jams a lot with the students on the violin. But I think the critical thing to all teachers that are looking to build a school and expand, yes, you want to get amazing musicians in, but once you've got them in to work with you, it needs to be an ongoing training process. We meet up every week. We discuss elements of the method we feel that could be improved from the feedback we're getting from students, from the results. We work together all the time, and I think training and working together as a team is the most important thing. It's probably even more important than the qualifications of all the people you're working with. Of course, they've got to be very, very good. They've got to be flexible musicians, but it's the training aspect and the collaboration aspect that is important to make sure everyone's on the same page.
Do you have a couple of like things that a teacher must demonstrate to be part of your crew?
Oh, the list is quite long, and I
Give us
don't
a
want to.
couple of just a couple of important ones for you.
I think what means a lot to me is that when we are very lucky. We have fantastic facilities. So we have two grand pianos in our studios, and so I think it's very important that the teacher can give the student a collaborative musical experience. And what I mean by that is that when a student comes in to play a chord progression, a song, or even a classical piece, that we're playing together a lot and we're creating a feeling around the student that they can try new things, they can let go. A lot of people, and you would see this in your own students, I think every member you would have would probably be able to relate to this. A lot of students overthink when they play, and that creates a halt. Just when they're making some beautiful music, they stop and go, "Oh, what's going on here?" It's like, no, don't stop. We want to create an environment where a student feels that they are capable of achieving, anything they want, and that wrong notes don't exist. Because if you have this right and wrong, black and white view of music, it's very destructive. I had it many years in my own playing. So it's being able to create that experience, and I think that's what all of our teachers, that's the one like thing I really look for in our teachers.
And isn't it funny that so much of a traditional piano education is about teachers correcting mistakes?
Oh yes.
And here we this is
Like we're
exactly the opposite, right?
secretaries.
Yeah, that's
Yes.
right. And it's just
That's an A flat, not an
so it's just so unhelpful. It's just I don't know how people can do it day after day. Send them home with a piece, come back, here's your mistakes, correct them, fix them up, here's another piece. I mean, it's such a negative way to teach too. So I'm with
Yes.
you. I agree. And it's those moments of mistakes that kids, you have to go, no, like play that again. That was great. What did you do? Let's have a look. Oh, you played the wrong, inverted commas, left-hand note with that chord, but how cool does that sound? Let's work with that. I mean, that's what I like doing too. It sounds like it's very similar Those moments of accidental brilliance, someone called them once.
Yes, yes. And asking questions. So rather than so if a student is doing something a little odd with a piece of music that's not quite working, rather than saying, oh, that doesn't really work, why don't you phrase it like this, just asking them. So play that part again. Can I just record you playing that? Yeah, record them. So what do you think of that? What do you think works and doesn't work about that? And just asking, coaching.
Yes.
And then we actually have a rule. We actually don't say, we don't call ourselves at the school piano teachers. For this podcast, I didn't want to confuse anybody. We actually call ourselves coaches because we try and elevate the process to a coaching process, which is beyond teaching. It's making the pupil complete, trying to enable them and empower them to be completely self-aware of what they can do,
yep,
rather than telling them what to do. And that's actually a very hard thing to do. I can't say I've completely mastered that yet, but that's what we aim for.
Yeah, ask more questions rather than tell, you know, give your opinion, mm. I think, yeah.
Yes.
So the Harmony Method that you've mentioned, is that a written book, like a series that all your teachers use, or is it the philosophy behind what's going on?
We have so many exercises and sheets and handouts regarding the Harmony Method. We could probably make 4 or 5 books. We've strategically decided not to turn it into a book at this stage, mainly because one thing I find is that so many people go out and buy books and just leave them on the shelf and don't implement them.
Yeah.
There are plans to release a Harmony Method series, but it's going to be a full DVD video series. We have some free teasers that we send out to the public where they can sign up and get it over the website. And for your members, that'd be very useful for them to download some of it because go and use it. It's fantastic stuff. But at the moment, we are very much focused on giving our members as much as we can, rather than trying to just publish this couple of books to the whole world. But that's going to change at some stage as well.
Yeah, it's great. Well, I mean, we need more information out there that supports this kind of method of teaching because we know it's creative, it's effective, and it deepens people's understanding, as we said right at the beginning.
Yes. Yes.
Do you use technology in your contemporary school?
Yes, we do. We have a course for people who are students who are interested in music production. It's not an area I would call myself a huge expert in, but we have a few staff who run some fantastic courses with that. That is a fantastic attachment to the Harmony Method because harmony is in lots of songs, so it moves beautifully into production. We do record a lot of what students are playing in our retreat courses. The whole week is recorded and packaged into 10, 15 CDs. So they have a constant reference of what they've been immersing themselves in.
Yeah.
So recording is something we take very seriously. And to that extent, modern technology is amazing.
I'm talking, as well, backing tracks and things for modern music or using GarageBand or software to create arrangements for things. Do you do that so much or not so much?
Yes, we use some. So on the iPad, we have GarageBand. iReal Pro is used as an app.
It's one of my favorites. Yeah.
It's fantastic. So we use a lot of the beats to make backing tracks on that. It's what I call a glorified metronome because it's got some fantastic drum templates on there. But because also we have two pianos in our studio, a lot of the time we don't even use that in the lesson because we can play together.
Yeah.
So it's the live interaction of two musicians.
That's great.
Which is really fun.
Apologies if you're able to hear noise in the background. There's some other movement going on at my house. So excuse that if you can hear it. So what about exams? Obviously, London's the hub of a number of exam boards. What's your take on the place of exams in contemporary music education?
That's a very good question. I think I'm not going to be completely dogmatic and say that they're a complete waste of time, which would be a very easy answer to give. There are a lot of cons to exams. I think the worst thing about them is learning 3 pieces for the year. I mean, this is the way the exam syllabus is often used. The student learns 3 pieces a year and then does that grade. And, of course, they'll get up to grade 8, and we say this most grade 8 students probably couldn't even figure out how to play Happy Birthday at a birthday party because their music education has been so wafer thin. But when used properly, the exam system can be very useful. It can give a student something to aim for. We also are fans of the ABRSM jazz exam syllabus.
That's got some great stuff in it.
It does. It is in a bit of a need of an upgrade because it came out in 1997, so I don't think they have had enough students take it to upgrade the syllabus. So I would encourage all teachers to go out and use this syllabus. It's very easy to use. You don't have to be a jazz pianist to be able to teach it effectively because it's so well explained. And I'm sure, I've just gone through some of your previous podcasts today, and there's already some amazing wealth of advice on improvising. So that's fantastic. So we do use the exam system, but we use it very carefully and precisely. So, for instance, if a student is, let's say, 10 or 11 years old and they're going through a big musical breakthrough, we pull them out of the exam system, give them music that's much harder, and then they've skipped three or four grades the next year. So we don't use it in a linear way. We use it in a like grade 2, grade 3, all right, no more exams for a while, grade 6, grade 7. So most of our students who might take a grade 8 exam have probably only taken three or four piano exams in their life. They've skipped through the system. Mm. We've substituted with material that's more appropriate to them.
Yeah. And I tend to agree with what you've said about exams. I think there's a great place for them. There's a need for them in certain areas, but it's the way that they're approached. They're not a syllabus, and if you're only teaching three pieces, we've got a problem, a big problem. I'm with you. All right, well, let's talk about some tips for piano teachers who are listening. Let's say they totally get what we're saying. I think it makes a lot of sense. Maybe they've dabbled a little bit in the improvising and the composing stuff that I've given them online or that they've found in other places. Can you give us, I don't know, maybe five tips that you think should be at the top of the list for piano teachers to take action in the next few weeks to try some of what you're talking about?
Well, yes, five tips, and that's a fantastic question. And I put together a couple of notes about a few tips because you did hear me speak on Monocle, and that was a business interview. So I do want to give a few bits of business advice as well. Not that the business world should be completely separate to the music world. You actually want it very closely integrated. But firstly, on a musical perspective, I think teaching harmony. Even if you don't play much jazz or popular music, you can incorporate harmony into your lessons. And I'm not talking traditional sit down and do polyphony arrangements in four-part chorale, but getting students aware of that 1 and 5/7. It's Christmas time coming up now, so they're all going to want to play carols. So rather than going straight to those archaic carol books, get the student to hear the 1, 4, 5 in Silent Night. Get them to hear the 1, 4, 5 in all the Christmas carols. I mean, they're all pretty much the same. So, and if you can't, if you're sort of not so confident with your ear, this is a really good opportunity for you to realize it's not as hard as it might appear to be. So you can get your own musical confidence right up there. But I'm sure a lot of your members are very clued up on all of that. So,
well, and just in case they aren't, when you're saying 1, 4, 5, can you just confirm what you mean by that?
Yes, so 1, 4, 5, the degree of the scale. So let's say we have a C major scale, C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C. Chord 1, C major, chord 4, F major, and chord 5, G major, the dominant chord. And this is the staple of Western music.
Yeah.
So Christmas carols.
Are a lot of built up of even C major, C, F, and G chords. There's, heaps of music that only uses three chords.
And if anybody is still a bit unsure of how to incorporate harmony into their teaching, visit our website, londonpianolessons.co.uk, enter your details, and we're going to send you about 5 or 6 videos over our Vimeo channel to your email address, and there is tons of ideas. And please Steal them. They're all yours. Harmony is universal. Harmony is actually not under copyright. You can actually nick a whole harmonic progression of a song and not get into any trouble, which is very strange. The music industry is most odd.
Well, we can all use the Pachelbel Canon chord progression quite
That's
safely.
right,
Yeah.
yeah.
All right, so tip number one, use harmony, right? Or
Yes,
teach
use harmony.
harmony.
Yes, that's right. So I'm going to give some more business type of advice, but this will, I think, for a lot of teachers, give them much more satisfaction in their work. And have a target market, target a demographic. Don't just try and teach everybody for the sake of teaching everybody. We all actually have clients that we would prefer to work with. If you're tired of teaching lots of children who you can't motivate to practice, maybe you should be teaching adults. This is a huge movement around the world. So many adults who have been in that job for 20, 30 years they don't like, and they are dying to play music, and they're dying for somebody to reach out to them and say, I will show you how to play music and we can make some great music together. And actually, they're some of our best clients are adults. And we actually limit the amount of children we see to only the Saturdays, because we want them all wide awake and not after school. So we are predominantly an adult run school institution, but we do have about 20% children. So there are loads of very interesting demographics. You can actually think of three or four of your favorite students you'll probably find are all the same demographic. So they're not the only ones in the world. You can copy them and you can make a practice that niches. And I think a lot of piano teachers make this big mistake of thinking that they're going to lose clients if they're not trying to talk to everybody. But the actual truth is, when you try and talk to everybody, you talk to nobody. And if you focus on the people that you're going to create a better collaboration on, you'll have a much more prospering business. And your website, you know, copy can change and your whole message can change to talk to that group of people. And with the technology out there, targeting is very easy, easier than it's ever been anyway.
Yeah, it's great. Great
third,
tip.
The third tip would be review your fees. I feel most music teachers are not charging enough these days. They are, I mean, I think so many other industries have taken over ours in fees. And if you're a very dedicated musician, you've spent your whole life studying this, are you, just ask yourself a question, are you really charging what you're worth? And I think there's a lot of fear in the music community that we have to be so charitable, and we end up being cheaper than everybody else and poorer than everybody else as a result of that. What we do, which works extraordinarily well, is we give our clients fee options. So we don't just charge everyone the same rate, because different people have so many radically different needs. Some people want to pay as they go. Some people want to pay for a whole semester. And some people want a subscription option, which comes with extra benefits and features. And that will immediately tell you who your best students are, not just in terms of how they'll feed your business and your studio, but how they respect your work. And then you can focus more on them, and that will bring huge satisfaction to your work. And it's such a simple thing to put in place, and I see so many of my colleagues not doing that and struggling as a result of that. We're up to number four, aren't we?
Yeah, just before you go on, you mentioned subscription. What did you mean by that?
So we have a subscription option where for a monthly fee, a student will get access to our entire team. They will get access to our practice rooms. So it's a bit like a gym. So they can come to our practice rooms. They get access to workshop events. They get concert tickets. We just really look after them. And it's called the Maestro course. It's extremely popular. Now, if you're running a studio with just yourself teaching, you can have your subscription work a little bit differently. You could, for instance, provide sheet music every month, things that arrive in the mail. Use your imagination a bit. Maybe you could You could arrange their piano to get tuned every 6 months. Just make your customers' life easy for them. People are so busy these days. Don't just tell them to go out and buy the sheet music from Amazon, because they won't. And that just wastes time. So do it for them. And if you just, those little small details make people really treasure your work even more, and it creates more of a value in what you're giving to their life, and that's how it works. You're giving value to other people with the wisdom that you have in your music.
Hear, hear. Good. Well said. Well said.
And I think the last thing is, it's very much related to that. Just really simple things that so many musicians get wrong, and it just bothers me because I'm a jazz musician, so I see this all the time. Punctuality. So important. And, you know, I've been burnt with this before. I mean, when I was younger, in my early 20s, I was probably the latest person on this planet. And, you know, I just didn't show up, didn't I? And didn't move anywhere with my music career. It's such a simple bit of advice, but it's almost like a secret. If everything runs exactly to time, people take you so much more seriously. And the second thing that goes with punctuality, it's almost like a magic pudding that is so simple and we overlook, is dress. When a student shows up, dress beautifully. Now, I actually didn't know this podcast was being Skype, so I'm looking a bit well, I've got my skivvy on, but, you know.
Sorry, you're wearing clothes. That's fine.
So I was caught out today. But I think there's these two things. And when I say, I'm not talking about wearing a tuxedo to you. Though you should try that. Maybe that would do some amazing things, but if you want to. But it's about just really taking this work that you're doing, you know, to the fullest integrity, and these things, the general public out there, they notice these things. And in our music world, we're so close to music that we don't always pay attention to these things because we're a special breed. We're musicians.
So, great. Yeah. Good tips. I don't know if that was number four or number five, but you've given us plenty of great value. So really appreciate that.
More than enough.
look, it's been really, really good talking to you. I'm going to kind of wrap it up now. Is there anything that that you'd like to cover that we didn't get a chance to talk about so far that you think is quite important?
Well, I think we have covered a lot. I've had a great time talking about harmony. I think that's it's great to always speak to like minds about that.
Yeah, we're definitely on the same wavelength.
Yeah, for all of your members who live in London, I'm giving a concert at Conway Hall in a couple of days from now, on the 22nd of November.
This will actually be going out on Friday, so I'm afraid it will have already happened by the time it's gone out.
Well, okay, everyone can wish me luck then. That's good. And
we'll trust that it's gone well. Go on.
Oh, yeah, so just for more information on all of our work, just visit londonpianolessons.co.uk, leave your details, and we'll send you a few emails with some great content, which will really enrich your classes.
Brilliant. And that's just as relevant to teachers as it is. I assume you've actually designed that for students, but for teachers it'd be great too.
Yeah, I think it's universally great. And they move nice and slowly, so they really are very thorough and very applicable.
Brilliant. Well, Tom, thank you very much for your time. I look forward to catching up with you when I'm in London at some stage in the future, so we can hang out.
It'd be great to see.
Yeah, and it'll be good to have a look at the school. So it's the, for anyone that's interested, the London Contemporary School of Piano, not the School of Contemporary Piano, run by Tom Donald. Thank you very much for being on the show today, and we'll speak to you again soon, hopefully.
Great, Tim. Thanks a lot.
All right. See ya. Hi, everyone. It's Tim here again. Thank you very much for listening to or watching today's episode. I do hope you got something out of it. I put them together to be as relevant and useful to you in your studio and your teaching as possible. So do let me know your feedback. If you've got any questions, comments, critique, whatever it is, you can email me at admin@timtopham.com. Now, before we go, I did want to mention a few little reminders. Firstly, if you're looking for transcripts of every episode from episode 50 onwards are available at the show notes page. And you can either view the transcript on screen or you can download a PDF that you can use to research and refer to. To find the show notes of any episode of Tim Topham TV, just type in timtopham.com/episode and then the number. So e.g. timtopham.com/episode20. Now, as you may have heard, I am offering currently you guys, my loyal podcast listeners, some of the most dedicated teachers I know, a $100 discount off annual membership of my Inner Circle. The code you need to access that is TTTVpodcast, all one word, and the place you're going to find out more about what you get for membership, the benefits, hear some testimonials of current members. The place you go is timtopham.com/community. Finally, if you have a suggestion for a guest, I would always love to hear about it. A lot of you guys have some fantastic connections. So if you're thinking of anyone that would be really cool to interview, please email me, admin@timtopham.com. We'll get to me, and I look forward to hearing from you, and we'll see you in the next episode. If the idea of a piano teacher's community where you get to access the best educational resources, rub shoulders with expert teachers from around the world, and have immediate access to feedback for any of your questions, then Inner Circle membership is for you. The Inner Circle is my private community of piano teachers from across the globe who share a commitment to creating and delivering the most inspiring, modern, and progressive learning experiences for their students. Membership is now open, so head to timtopham.com/community to find out more and get involved today. I can't wait to see you on the inside.